This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor with Professor H.J. Mackinder, International Relations, commenting on Six Capitals, Six Points of View. Keith, again, the hard warrant in the document release said to be classified document. We have no fixed way of ascertaining the fact or fiction of this, but that is the assertion by major reporting organizations, including the Wall Street Journal. This document points to an end date for air defense in Ukraine running out of the Buk anti-air missiles and the S-300 anti-air missiles. Professor, this fact, apparently, if verified, and I don't have it verified, Keefe knows very well. What does this tell us about Keefe's point of view in here in these spring days?
Well, I think what it tells us is that they're going to have to figure out a way to strengthen their air defenses without American help. There are certainly other countries in the area who have air defenses. Sweden, notably, has extremely advanced air defenses. And Sweden didn't stop being neutral and join NATO as this war broke out just because she thought it would be nice to sit in a different part of the assembly hall. It's because she understands that her fate as an independent country is at stake, and Finland is the same way. So if we, say, let somehow arrange for Ukraine to lose air defenses, then we're just going to stand around and we're going to see other countries enter into the war, which will make it even more difficult to resolve. This is a reflection of the lack of understanding of war in Washington. There's no understanding that that you need weapons, and you need certain particular weapons, and you need them in certain sequences and all the rest. And that Biden was quoted as saying, well, they've got tanks. Well, what do they need aircraft for? Well, I hope he's seen some films of World War II. I mean, when those Panzers moved ahead, what did they have swooping down from above? The Stukas. These things go together. You have to have an air cap if you're engaged in an offensive. Now, why we are withholding, we either should be trying to win this, or we should say, look, tough luck, Ukraine. We're bugging out, as the troops said in Korea at the time of the great retreat of the American 8th Army. But we can't have it halfway. We can't sort of win this or lose this without really winning it or lose it. The stakes are very, very high. Now, having said that, I would say that Putin apparently is, according to General Ben Hodges, who is a very, very intelligent man, they see, as I think the Ukrainians do, they see Crimea as being where the war is going to be decided, and they are building massive trench lines and all the rest in Crimea. Now, the Ukrainians are not going to be so stupid as to charge the Maginot Line. So what I think we can expect is that the Ukrainian counteroffensive, which doesn't need to be launched at any particular time, if they can just wait until they've got what they need, it will probably begin in the Donbas, which is where Russia is weakest, but it will conclude in southern Crimea with a defeat of the Russian army, and they will do this by isolating the Crimean Peninsula, which is to say using precision deep strikes to hit military facilities, headquarters, and above all the Kerch Bridge, which will cut Crimea off from Russian resupply. And at that point, they'll be able to close in, and they'll be impossible for Russia to resupply. But there is a scenario, a very clear scenario, I think, where Ukraine actually wins. But if we, for reasons that I are beyond human understanding, as far as I'm concerned, we seem to want this war to end, but we're very, very wobbly-kneed about whether we actually want Ukraine to win. The alternative is for Russia to win. Think about what the implications of that are for Europe.
The implications are dire, according to NATO. At this point, do you Do you see NATO wobbly or individual states of NATO wobbly? Can you tell the difference? Because unanimity is a very high bar.
Well, I am very struck by Mr. Macron, who is, what can I say? I think he's feckless or he's gormless, whatever you want to say. I think he's right about the French economic policy, which he's impaled himself on, but he's correct that they have to do something about their pension system. But he has gone about this in a way that has alienated the French people. And then it's absolutely appalling. He's now channeling dear old General de Gaulle, who had this idea that France, 210,000 square miles, could somehow be the pivotal nation in a world which had U.S. and Canada, which is 6 million square miles, and in those days, the Soviet Union was about 12 million square or 8 million square miles. It's just a French, it's a recurrent French delusion. And what has interested me is that the NATO countries have roasted Macron, and the German foreign minister is now going to Beijing, and she has made a statement which is exactly at odds, totally at odds with Macron. And Macron has been issuing, explanations of what he said, showing that he didn't mean what he said. So I just figure, well, I love France. Every American has two countries, America and France. But at this moment, I'm not too crazy about
Let's go
Macron.
To Brussels then. NATO headquarters, EU headquarters, in a banking crisis, in a world that's recovering from a pandemic, in a global slowdown. We're headed to Brussels with Professor H.J. Macinder, International Relations. This is the Friends of History Debating Society. I'm John Batchelor.